Jimmy D and the Wolf podcast going live.
Yo. Hello, my friend.
Yeah, well, I had to turn the volume up there. Hopefully there's no feedback. So here we are on a Tuesday evening. Springtime is here. And I learned today that the IRS extended the deadline till May 17th. I didn't even know that.
That was sweet of them.
That was so sweet of them.
They're a bunch of sweethearts anyway, those guys.
I guess pandemic affects everything.
Yeah. IRS, they spelled hours wrong.
You know, I mean, they were responsible for sending out the stimulus checks, and I think that overwhelmed them. They're not set up for doing that sort of thing, so they've been cutting staff. I read articles that they've been cutting staff, so they're shorthanded, and got these huge tasks of sending out all these stimulus checks. Just overwhelmed them.
I couldn't imagine, man. Hats off to them.
Hats off to them. Yeah.
I would rather take a beating than do that kind of job. Seriously. It's like accountants, you know, I know people that love being in that world and they love doing that all day long.
Well, I don't have the patience for it. I mean, I like looking at the numbers and digesting it. And I mean, a spreadsheet guy, I love spreadsheets, but that's more finance, I guess, versus the accounting. I mean, an accountant will spend 2 days looking for a one penny discrepancy. And whereas as a driver, I'll just like, okay, we're just off a couple cents. Okay, just
close
put an
enough.
Adjustment. Just put an adjustment in there and move on.
Yeah, same here. Is there more than there was? Yeah, we're good. Frees you up to do other things, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But thank God for accountants. They're usually analytical personality types. And there are four personality types. Some go by different names, but driver, expressive, analytical, and amiable. And thank God for all four.
I use that every single day.
Yeah, it's so useful.
It really is, you know, you can offer a better.
Just round up. I can't. Jeff says just round up. Sorry. Go ahead, Jimmy. Go ahead.
You can offer a better explanation of that than I can. The four personalities and cells.
Yeah. For anyone who's not aware, I mean, and they go by, there's also DISC, D-I-S-C, D-I-S-C. It's the same thing. And there's also sometimes they're listed as animals, like an amiable would be a golden retriever. I think a driver is a lion. I've forgotten what the animals are, but I learned it in sales training at DuPont as driver, expressive, amiable, and analytical. And it basically, the way I was taught, and there was a sales tool so that you got into the box of your customer. And the extremes were like a driver, what they want to save. A driver wants to save time. And I'm a driver. And you're a driver, but you're also an expressive. I think you're on the border, but you could flip-flop between. But sure. A driver wants to save time. And so if you're selling to a driver from a sales standpoint, you better be making your pitch as you're walking into their office.
Yeah.
Because they don't have time. We don't have time as a driver. Always time focused, trying to save time. Versus an amiable, which is actually the other extreme of a driver. If you walked in an amiable's office and did that, they would be so insulted. They wouldn't throw you out because they're nice people. A driver will throw you out. Drivers sometimes are come across as rude. But an amiable to sell to an amiable, you go in and you maybe put your feet up or whatever and say, how's the kids? How's the golf game? How's the wife? And 10 minutes in, after you've established that relationship, you say, hey, I got this new offer from my company, or this new product, whatever it is you're selling. And that's what we were taught. And the analytical, which most CPAs, I think, are accountants, or the best accountants are analyticals. They're the people that always, if you have a group of friends and the guy or gal that always reads the manual, that's an analytical.
Yeah.
Drivers don't got time for reading manuals. So if you want to sell to an analytical, bring in all the studies you got. If you got a stack of documents that are like 10 New York City phone books thick, all the better. Just bring it in and drop it on their desk and say, here's all the backup documentation as to why you should buy our product. If you did that to the driver, they would like, get out of here. I don't have time to read that. Analyticals love documents. And but they want to save face, by the way. Analyticals want to save face. They don't want to be wrong. They want to save face. They don't like to be embarrassed. And amiables want to save relationships. Amiables will often martyr themselves to save relationships, which is one of their negative characteristics because they don't look out for themselves. And then you got expressives. Expressive is the person who's always the life of the party kind of person. And Jimmy can be that, play that role. You can do that. You have that where, you know, everybody crowds around as they tell jokes and whatever. And to sell to an expressive, they want to know what's in it for their group. You know, so expressive, I know a guy, you know, or I know a gal, or I know, you know, they always have, if you're in their group, they're going to recommend you and encourage you. And expressives want to save effort. So anyhow, how did I get on that?
Well, I asked you to explain it.
Okay.
I think it's great stuff, man.
It is. It helps you understand how people, and then there are, and so there's always a secondary characteristic and primary and secondary. And my secondary, I actually, the way I did it at Pont, they had you send out to people you worked with. And ideally, you found people who were above you, like your boss, and people below you have had, if you had subordinates. If not, like a secretary, like in the office pool, that, you know, that really wasn't your subordinate, but yet really took direction from you, that sort of thing. And then also people at your peer level. And so, and then you send out these questionnaires, and they came back and they tabulated, and then they told you what you were. So it wasn't just self-determining. It was actually by people you interacted with, both above you, below you, and at your same level. And so it was legit. And I came in primary as a driver and secondary as an expressive. So my secondary style is an expressive. But primarily I'm an introvert, but I feel comfortable I can act as an expressive where you can switch back and forth. You're like a driver, expressive driver.
Well, it's called borderline personality disorder. Or maybe schizophrenia. I'm not sure which one it is.
So,
I use it to my advantage.
So, it's instructive. You know, some people don't like to try to be categorized, and I understand that. But it's just a tool. It's just a tool. And no group is any better than any other.
Sure.
Any other. We need all four. A great organization is all four and an equal balance of them because if we're all drivers, we're going to kill each other. If we're all analyticals, I mean, typically not much will get done because analyticals are perfectionists and they will take forever and continue to improve it and tweak it. Thank God for that. But mm-hmm. Eventually stuff's got to be pushed out the door if you're making product or whatever it would be. And so on. So they all have strengths and weaknesses. Anyway.
I use it. Yeah. Every single day, man.
Yeah, it is a very useful tool. And so I know how we got started on it. The best accountants, I believe, are analyticals. That kind of personality are attracted to that, you know, getting the numbers right, get satisfaction from getting all the numbers right. And thank God for that, because we need that. Because often, to be honest, if there's a penny off, it often could be a symptom of a much bigger entry error that is much more than a penny. You could have $1 million going that were mismanaged and not put in the correct category and two different entries that they are only off by a penny, but the actual miscategorization could be much, much larger than that. So when there's something off, it is important to track it down. Sometimes, I mean, sometimes it'll end up being a much more significant, some things were miscategorized and you'll find it by tracking down that penny. Or a few cents, whatever it is. So it is important. I mean, I did get my MBA and I had to, and Jeff has got his MBA. I'm sure you had to take some accounting classes, Jeff. I think Jeff's on here. I already made a comment. So, that's part of the getting the numbers right and making sure it's all entered correctly. So
Yeah. So
there we go. Steve's got it. Steve says the four animals of the personality are the lion, the beaver, the otter, and the golden retriever. Yeah. The lion, I think, is the driver, and the golden retriever was amiable. And I don't remember which beaver and otter were for the others. Industrious. I'd have to look that up. But there's other systems. So. Fedger Ledger. Jeff says Fedger Ledger. They used to call me in accounting class. So you were skilled at it, Fedge, I'm going to guess, right? Yeah. Otter's very sociable. Social. Okay, thank you, Steve.
So that's the expressive.
Yeah, that's got to be the expressive, yeah. See, I don't know the characteristic of an otter. I don't. So that would be my... Beavers are very industrious, I know. So maybe that's... So the otter must be the expressive, I'm going to guess. So... what I know of it is, I bet you were a character in all your classes, Jeff. I absolutely believe that you were. You're a character to this day. Thank God to know you. Golden is loyal, absolutely loyal, 100%. Yeah, the amiables are always have your back. Empathize, great empathy as well. Typically, an amiable person will. Pastors, amiables make great pastors.
Yeah. I have a brother. I'm not going to say any names, but I have a brother that's an amiable.
They have great empathy. And, my brother-in-law, I would call him an amiable, and he's a pastor. He was a phenomenal pastor. I mean, a lot of today, as a Christian and churchgoer, the modern pastor is almost, the head pastor is almost more of a driver, because they're about building a bigger church, a big organization. And the church that I attended in, a previous church that I attended, without getting too specific, the pastor was a driver, and he was not good at any of the, visitation at the hospitals or whatever. He didn't have that warm empathy. Great at delivering a sermon, great at, goal setting and organizational, but he was horrible at interpersonal skills. And so, amiables are more focused on the end of one-to-one, and they make great, if you want somebody to empathize with you and sit with you for hours and talk through your issues and problems, you want an amiable. Right. A driver ain't got time for that. So yeah. Golden retriever, amiable, is a phenomenal person to be empathetic when you're going through hard times. You want to find your friend that is that category. And in my opinion, I'm not an expert, but just a tool that I've tried to use. And it was 3 or 4 day training we went through, and I still, use it almost daily. So.
Oh, that's great stuff.
Yeah. So, well, we didn't really have a category today. Last two times we talked about AI songwriting, which is fascinating, but I don't have any new articles. The reason we did it last time, there was an article that came across my desk after we did it the first time. And did you get a chance to listen to the Jimi Hendrix version, Jimmy?
Not yet, man.
Yeah.
I still want to.
Yeah.
But I haven't heard it yet.
Yeah, I haven't either. I want to do that as well. But one idea that we had for today was to talk about real estate trends, because for whatever reason, real estate is going, prices are going crazy across the country. There's no rhyme or reason to it.
Here's something I've been thinking about a lot. I would not want to be in the business of owning commercial office space right now.
True.
Because of COVID, so many people are working from home. And I think what we've witnessed, unexpectedly and unbeknownst to many people, is the death of the commercial office space for the most part. And this goes to a whole nother level. I was thinking about it the other day and researched a little bit that massive $2.2 trillion facility that Apple has in California right now, there's nobody working there.
Oh, really? This is, I had not run that. It's not an Oracle or anything that I had seen.
Yeah, everybody's working from home. So the question, trying to be forward thinking about it is, what's going to happen to all of those facilities? That's going to change real estate and how it works as a whole, I believe personally, because these companies aren't going to lose the money on the properties. They have to find something to do. And if you're looking at some of these spaces at 1 million square feet, 5 million square feet, what's going to happen there? If there's not enough industry to fill them, I predict, and I could be way off because I am frequently, but I predict that you'll see like co-op living spaces with some of those bigger buildings. You know, 98% of the counties in the United States are past the crisis threshold of affordable housing.
Right. You had shared that to me personally before. Yeah. So there's not enough housing for whatever reason. I don't mean our population is not growing. In fact, our population growth has barely eked out a growth over the last year or two, because I kind of follow that, because demographics is destiny. Sure. And I kind of follow that. And our population hasn't been growing. So why the heck are we running out of spaces for people to live? That's another mystery.
It's only affordable housing. It's an affordable housing crisis. There's lots of great big homes that people can't afford.
So Steve made a great comment, and that's 100% right. And I put it on the screen. It says real estate is up because of it's too expensive to replace the home, lumber prices, etc. So people want more to sell their home, my opinion.
Anyway. Yeah.
And I think that's valid, Steve. I think you're right on
track. It's crazy, man. I'm doing some renovations right now and it's brutal.
And there are people, didn't you say that there are construction companies in your area that have said that it's too expensive to renovate right now?
Yeah, few people are renovating on the level that we're doing it on, because it's lumber's so high right now.
And why? There's no rhyme or reason why lumber is high. Why is lumber high?
Because the people that own lumber yards just saw an opportunity to jack it up when everything else was going crazy.
But that's got to come back down to earth. It's got to be an artificial.
It has to pop. The lumber has to pop. The housing market has to pop. It has to happen.
Well, you know, maybe I need to do more little research on this. Last time we had a bit of a recession, and we did, I mean, I guess it's two quarters in a row is the definition of negative growth recession. And I think 2000 or 2020 actually ended up being a negative growth for the year. I'm pretty sure it was. And because from where they started, we're at a lower level. Now, we did have a negative 25 growth, and when we had a 25% the next quarter, but when you've gone down 25%, you need more than a 25% growth the next quarter to get back to where you were. Like if you go down 50%, so if you're at 100 and you go down 50%, you're at 50, and then you have a 50% growth, you're only at 75. So, you know, you're not back to 100. So two quarters in a row, one negative 25 drop and one then 25 up doesn't bring you back to where you were. So I think pretty sure we had a negative growth in 2020. I need to verify that. And so that is a definition of a recession. I think our definition of recession is two consecutive quarters with negative growth. So we're in a recession. And the last time we had a recession, which was 2008, and commodity prices went crazy. I know, because I was exporting soybeans, and I remember they're breaking into houses and ripping the copper out of the walls in 2008, and soybeans doubled, two and a half times in price, and literally forced me out of the business of exporting soybeans. And so for some reason, commodity prices go high when there's a recession. What the heck does that even, how is that possible? I mean, lumber is a commodity, you know?
So. Right. I guess it's that, you know, people want to put their money in something super tangible that they know is going to be used. But I think emotion has fueled a lot of the housing market. Everybody was locked up in their homes. Everybody,
right.
Well, your home really is of like your space. You know, I could be way off on that, but I think it's a lot of it's emotion driven.
Well, they say that there's, well, I think we talked about it previously, people being at home and looking at all the things that they wanted to work on, and they can't, you know, do other things that they were doing. So people did a lot of do-yourself projects. I think Lowe's and Home Depot are killing it because, and then all the stuff, the containers, is a shortage of containers. I think we talked about that in a previous podcast because I read an article, because I used to be in the exporting business and I would use containers to export. And they would basically, the prices to send a container to Japan or Asia was a lot cheaper than it cost to bring it in, because they made the money by bringing in the containers. But now there's so many goods coming into the country, flooding the country that we're buying, that they're not even taking the time to ship those containers to the Midwest to fill them up with things like grain to export back to Asia. They're just putting them back on the boat empty and shipping them back to where they're coming, where they can load them back up to bring them back, because the money-making trip, the big money-making trip. And I read an article that a guy paid, where he's, well, had been paying like $2,000-$3,000 for a container to come from Asia to the U.S. He paid $65,000 for a container. That's 30x increase, because there's just shortage. And then it's exacerbated by the fact that the union workers on the docks, like in Long Beach, are have COVID. And Michael Stucker says hi. And so the union guys that run those forklifts that was over, that unloads the, I mean, it's a huge forklift because it's lifting up a 40-foot container. Those ships sitting there in port in Long Beach for like weeks at a time waiting to unload, because there's a bottleneck of the guys that do the unloading, and they can't replace them because it's unionized. It's just because they had COVID and they have people that are out because of that. And just a massive perfect storm of cluster F on top of cluster F that makes the container shortage, and so making it more expensive for goods coming in. And maybe that has to do also with the commodity prices of lumber. But I thought most of the lumber was produced in the U.S. I mean, we have our own lumber. So Steve says, interesting, your idea holds water. Makes sense. And then Michael says, hello here, Michael Stucker. Thank you guys for hanging with us. So commodity prices just is fascinating to me. Why, when we have a recession, there's two recessions in a row, commodity prices go the other direction. You know, because I know in South Dakota, because I still have family land in South Dakota, and I've had a couple of farmers reach out to me saying, if you want to sell some land, I'm looking to buy land. And that's usually what happens when grain prices are high, and grain prices have gone up substantially in the last 6 months, 6 to 9 months. Soybean prices just jumped. And so when that happens, farmers are like, hey, times are good. Time to add more land.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, food getting more expensive should be a pretty healthy indicator of what the economy is going to do in general.
Right, right.
House prices don't matter if it's $8 for a loaf of bread, you know.
But on top of that, we got an underbelly of people that are out of jobs because whatever job they had is under or you know, lost their jobs. There's a lot of people suffering. Unemployment is still up from what it was before COVID. Sure. So, you know, it's just an interesting of a divergence.
A lot of people are still getting unemployment and don't want to get back to it. If I didn't have such a big family, I wouldn't be able to staff a construction crew. There's no way.
You know, so it's just a fascinating times. I mean, I think that Charles Dickens' phrase applies, you know, it's the best of times and the worst of times. And in a way it is, it's a dichotomy. There are people that are just killing it. I mean, a lot of money, people, housing going up at the higher end because people are making money. I mean, a lot more money than before. And, you know, if you're doing anything that's related to Amazon or replying Amazon, I mean, if you're working for, like my nephew, I know he does his podcasts, and his partner that he does his podcast with works for UPS or FedEx. Sorry, Seth, I don't remember exactly which one, Tyler. But they've been able to do their podcast because Tyler is working so hard, so many hours, because he's delivering packages, you know. So I'm assuming he's getting overtime. I'm quite certain that he is. He's making mint, I'm sure. And there are other industries that are doing quite well. Farmers are doing very well. So it's just amazing how the dichotomies are. But whereas restaurants, a lot of restaurants have closed, and hotels are, you try to get a room somewhere, it's easy. Please come in, please right. come down, because nobody's traveling. And right. it goes back, you know, both business and personal, because COVID and whatnot. And then you're doing the Zoom. So why don't need to travel like before? So
isn't there a thing, and I could be wrong, man, check me on this if I'm wrong, but isn't there a thing of like an old saying or some kind of old commonality amongst farmers of the economy's doing bad, the farmers are doing good, or if the, or vice versa?
Well, it does seem to be that way. I mean, it seems like the farm economy runs the opposite of the general economy. Yes, absolutely. It seems like when the general economy is doing well, farmers maybe aren't doing that well. But when the general economy isn't doing so well, farm economy is doing well. And that seems to be, it doesn't make any logical sense to me why that is, but there is truth to that. So small town communities like Indiana is a big ag state, as is South Dakota. And Steve's got another great comment here. Thank you, Steve. He says he read that the number of billionaires has increased 30% since COVID. So, you know, the high end is, well, part of it is the stock market has just gone through the roof as well. So, you know, some of that money is stock, but I would be interesting to dig into that article that you mentioned. Maybe I'll do some research myself as to how did these people become billionaires? What were they in? But yeah, the separation between the haves and the have nots, I think, is accelerating.
Getting, yeah, absolutely.
You know, so it's just fascinating times. And how's it all going to end? I mean, is there going to be a bubble that's going to pop? Or is it just going to even out and going to have a gentle landing?
I think the housing market has to.
Think it's going to crash?
It has to.
What were you telling me? What do you think the percentage of houses have gone up in the last period of time in Madison, Indiana, where you live?
30%.
In how many months?
Probably 6 months to a year. Houses that you could have got all day for $75,000 are selling for like $119 right now.
It's crazy. Yeah. And
I don't know if that's everywhere, but certainly in Madison.
Thousands on the middle and the bottom were bankrupt while the top elites increased. COVID was great for the rich. 100%, Steve. Yeah. Oh,
right.
It's the separation that we had a really extreme separation between the haves and the have-nots before COVID, probably one of the more significant that we've had in the history of our country. And now it's only been exacerbated, made worse since COVID. I mean, we really had it in the end of the 19th century, late 1800s, when the Industrial Revolution came along. And I said this before, that I once saw an article where they tried to put together a list of the richest individuals in the history of the world, which is really hard to do, going back to antiquity, you know, Babylonian times, and Solomon from the Bible, who was very wealthy, and how do you equate that wealth? But, you know, there's a list of how many tons of gold they had and whatnot, and there's a value to that, and bring all that to current value. But every list that I've seen of the top 10, there's always the era that is represented the most is from that era of the 1870 to 2000. And then what changed that is, you know, the working conditions were horrible. Unionization came on, and trust busting. Teddy Roosevelt did a lot of trust busting and broke up those conglomerates and made it more equal, I guess, and made it more difficult to maintain that. And there are folks that say maybe we need that again, because the difference between the haves and the have-nots are as extreme as I think they were back in the end of the 19th century.
Well, sure. I mean, systematically, if you have money, it's all to your favor.
Michael says a four-bedroom, two-bath house in Indiana goes for $119. Here in Alabama, goes for $275. So, yeah, so there's a lot of room yet in Indiana to go up, right? I mean, you can double, still more double in price and still be cheaper than Alabama.
Yeah.
So what, Nashville? Nashville is absolutely crazy where I live. Yeah. I mean, I don't even look at housing. I read the last time I tried to track it was I read an article that said that in the first, let's see, real estate was analyzing rent markets. And it was in the first 5 months of 2020, this particular article. And it analyzed how much rent had gone up in markets around the country. It's old data, but this was an article that came out around June of 2020. And the number one market for rent, I'm talking about rental costs, what it costs to rent a apartment or whatever. And Nashville was the number one increase in the first 5 months of 2020. And this was including COVID. COVID started, if you remember, probably March is when it really started. Everybody realized that, hey, this is not going away. Where's this going to affect us?
Mm-hmm.
First 5 months of 2020, rents went up 15% in Nashville. That's an annualized basis of over 30%. And I don't think that slowed down. Everybody's saying it's impossible to get affordable housing. The rents are just accelerating at light speed, and it's just going crazy. And now because cost of materials, well, around where I live right here, they're building houses like crazy.
I know they are they're throwing them up like crazy. When I was down a few weeks ago, I couldn't believe it.
You know, so that's, they're not stopping because of the cost of
housing.
So, when I Google my house, I bought my house in 17 brand new, and it's gone up according to Redfin or some of those sites. Just, I mean, I'm not planning on selling, but I'm just, you know, it's good to know what your house is valued, and it's gone up, about 20% in those 3 years, according to what I've seen. And then an Uber driver was telling me, who lives just down the road from me, he said, because we talked about that, and he said, well, you could sell it for more. Redfin, they're not catching up. I mean, if you actually sold it, you get, because I know I was looking at buying real estate for investment in Nashville, and I was talking to a realtor, and she said, two things you have to know. You need to offer what they're asking or more, and you need to make your offer within 24 hours after the listing goes live.
Yep.
Otherwise, you're done.
Around here, they have their asking price, and you just start beating them up. In Nashville, they go the other direction.
So, while that may change, I mean, as everybody realizes, everybody catches up to the fact that it's going crazy. Yeah, so you're back to your statistic. It was 98% of the counties, Jimmy, are lacking. And that that's old data, right? When did you hear that? You heard that like 6 months ago.
Yeah. And 98% of the counties in the United States of America are past the crisis threshold for affordable housing. That's from the Housing and Urban Development, whatever it is.
So affordable housing, and I wonder how they would define affordable housing, but...
well, it's a percentage of your income and based on an average income.
Sure. Gotcha. Yeah.
You know, so that's different everywhere because income's different.
Right.
Geographically, where you go.
So there's definitely more affordable housing needed, you know, that can be...
Right. People are building these ginormous houses when they should be building little bitty houses if they're going to build.
Exactly. Yeah. Or
wants a little
duplexes or quadplexes. I mean, there's nothing wrong with a duplex. I mean, you can even own, you know, you can own your side of it. Well, back in Delaware, when one of my, the second house, the third house that I owned, well, the first house that I owned was a row house in Delaware, you know, so I had neighbors on both sides. Steve, thank you. Steve says, great discussion. Got to go. Have a great night. You too, Steve.
Steve, take care, bud. Thanks for watching, man. We've been praying for Shannon and you guys.
Okay, so my first house was a row house. So, I mean, I don't know how you divide the wall you share with both sides, but I mean, there were like five or six units right in a row with connected walls. And Michael says, when I moved to rent the Alabama, right? Michael's the one that's in Alabama. Rent was $875 for a 3-bedroom, 2-bath. My rent has jumped to $1,070 now.
Wow.
So, Yeah, rents just, I mean, I think every maybe renters will be going to 6-month leases so they can increase the rent more frequently. In this environment, you know, that's probably what this is going to be going towards. So, yeah, I bought my first townhouse for $65,000. How many bedrooms did it have? I think it had 2 bedrooms. Yeah, it had 2 bedrooms. And it was a long time ago. The city of Wilmington, Delaware. And it was a row house. You know, so you can build a row house, and then you know, it's cheaper to build 6 units or 7 units or 10 units in a row where they share the walls, and then sell that. If they want to own it, you can buy that. I mean, it wasn't a condo. There wasn't any condo fee because there were no common areas. But, you know, that's a way to build affordable housing.
Yeah. Well, it's fascinating to me just driving around town, and it's like how it's just been so cyclical with the sizes of the houses. Like in Madison, you see these historic homes from the early 1800s, and they're just massive. Like they're these castles, and then they get a little bit smaller and a little bit smaller. And then the 1920s homes are these little bitty cottage style homes. And then they, you know, they're about 800 square feet, 900 square feet, 1,000 square feet. And then by the 40s and the 50s, it's these Bedford style homes that are like 1,500 square feet. And, you know, that kind of lasted up into to the 80s. All of a sudden, they're 2,000 square feet. And then something happened around like mid-90s maybe where it just exploded and everybody tried to build the biggest, most inefficient house that they could possibly build again. And now there's all these 3,500, 5,000 square foot homes.
And they're putting up huge ones around. There's one up on top of the hill. I don't know how big that is, but that's a huge house.
Yeah.
Monster house.
It looks like a castle, man.
It does. You know, and it's neighborhood. I mean, the houses are in my neighborhood are not that far apart. I mean, my yard is probably 1/2 acre, you know, that, and you know, it's close enough that I don't hear my neighbor, but there's a development in just down the road, Cambridge something. And I literally, it looks like it may not quite be, but it looks like if you could open your window and pass the sugar to their neighbor without, you know, just through the window, that's how close those houses appear to be from driving by. Nice. You know, that's a super tight, you know, I don't think even light can come in there because they're too close to each other. You know, that's tight. That's just too tight. Right. I don't think I'd like to have a neighbor that close. You can barely walk between the homes. You know, but that's what it's getting to, because, you know, that's how you make it more affordable, I guess. The land is a major cost of building. And so you pack more in and pack it in.
Optimize that space.
So interesting times for sure.
Yeah, it's going to go one way or the other in the next year.
Yeah.
I predict we're going to see something, you know, radically different a year from now. If the market collapses or if it just skyrockets.
Well, I have a divergent opinion. I don't think it's going to crash. I mean, I don't think the demand's going to go away. We got 98% of people, but that's affordable housing. True. But the demand's not going to go away, I don't think. We have 2 different opinions. And, you know, we can agree to disagree and still be friends.
Well, I hope. I hope, Tim, that you're right. And I'm wrong. And I mean that.
I mean, what will happen? Interest rates are going to go up because we have debt. I mean, we have debt. And you know, no matter which side of the fence you're on the, I mean, both sides. I mean, our last administration, we got lots of trillions of debt added to the debt. And now under the Biden administration, we got more debt being added. So both parties have added debt, and we've got a ton of debt. And when you have that debt, it's going to be inflationary. There's no doubt that inflation pressure is got to be coming. Well, it's obvious when lumber's going up like that's an inflationary pressure. Mm-hmm. Those are houses going up. That's all inflationary pressure. So we're going to have inflation big time. And that means interest rates going up. And I mean, I remember I graduated college in 1980, and one of my frat brothers, dating myself, now you know how old I am. And one of my frat brothers went out and bought a new car, and the interest rate on his car loan was 21%. 21% interest rate. that's unsustainable, man. I mean, and I hope, pray to God that it doesn't get to that. But the Fed worked on breaking the back of inflation, and Greenspan and was the head of the Fed, and the main focus was to break the back of inflation. And because inflation is a horrible thing. Now, deflation is bad, too, because Japan, I mean, I have a lot of with Japan. Japan had incredible inflation. There was a period of time when the land in Tokyo, the value of the land in Tokyo was worth more than all the land in South Dakota, the market in South Dakota, in the U.S. The land in Tokyo, the value, the market value of the land in Tokyo, the city of Tokyo, which is just a city, maybe 10 million people, was worth more than the market value of all the land in the United States. And that was a bubble, and that broke big time. And then after that, they had deflation, and they fought with deflation for decades. And deflation is really bad too. Neither one are good. You want to keep it in a band because deflation, you have, and then we had stagflation in the US. I mean, so you had, we had still had inflation, but no growth. So that was really bad too. I remember they kept talking about stagnant inflation, and they call it stagflation. And so they're working really hard to try to get inflation down. And I hope we don't get back to that kind of stuff. I mean, the Fed is really important. Independent Fed, that they can make their decision without pressure from either party, I think is, I personally believe it's a major bedrock of the management of our country. And I mean, if you, assuming you got a good person ahead of the Fed, but there's a board. And it's going to be treacherous times going forward, in my opinion, no doubt. And there's going to be, you know, the levers that they can pull, the money supply and the interest rate and all of that is going to be really important to keep us from falling off a precipice and having some of these problems like runaway inflation or deflation. I don't think deflation is not going to be an issue, but or stagflation, where we continue to have inflation, but we don't have any growth. That those are the two risks, I would say, runaway inflation or stagflation. Hopefully we endure them, or crash, like you had indicated, maybe a crash. Interesting. Hope we don't have any of the extreme events and we can kind of land the plane and level everything out. But,
well, I hope you're right and I'm wrong,
but time will tell.
Yeah.
Well, so, please remember to find Podchaser, which is a website. And if you can find our podcast on there, and you make a comment, for every comment that is made on Podchest on our web, on our podcast on Podchaser, 25 cents will be donated to Feed America, and we will match that. Jimmy D and the Wolf will match that. So 50 cents will be donated to Feed America, and for the month of April. It's a good thing, and we will put a link to that in the comments, you know, on the platforms where this is at, and we appreciate you. Thank you for sticking with us.
Thanks for watching.
You bet. See you next time.